This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're listening to the This Life podcast with Dr. Drew Pinsky and me, Mike Catherwood.
That's right. We're doing it this time. So check it out. Thanks for listening.
You live.
Hi, everybody. I want to remind everyone that you can share this with your Facebook followers as well. We appreciate the support. This is a special This Life, that you live this life, with my present partner from KBC 790 AM Radio. We have that midday live show Mike and I do every day.
Yes, we do.
And also remember the other shows.
Well, 5 days a week.
Yeah. Dr.com, you get the Adam and Drew Show, the Weekly Infusion, me and Bob, and also the 790 KBC AM show is on there as a podcast as well. We link there. Do check out our sponsors. We want to thank Hydrolite. Go to the banner on Dr.com for details.
We've got good stuff, man.
I right now is just begging Susan, please get me some, because the reason I'm wearing sunglasses is I had eye surgery. I'm still wearing these damn sunglasses. My eyes are closed most of the time, and I thought it's too weird for me to just sit here with my eyes closed looking at a camera. That's too weird, so I'm wearing sunglasses. And Hydrolite is how I'm hydrating myself. And we have a 30% discount for everyone who goes to the banner at drdrew.com. Use the code DRDREWHY, Dr. Drew HY, at checkout, and you'll get 30% off today. Also have our link here on Facebook. And our phone lines are open now. The phone number is 323-649-8268, 323-649-8268. And, Mike, because I had eye surgery, I can't read this YouTube business here.
That is live on YouTube /Dr. Drew.
There you go. And it is our privilege, Mike and myself, to welcome Tani Katane.
Yeah,
Tani, welcome.
Tani Katane.
Hi, guys. Hi, guys. How are you doing?
Tani, you're such a privilege. It's such a pleasure to talk to you. How are your kids?
My kids are great. But first, can I just say that, do you know why I'm wearing these glasses?
Because it's a show support for me, I'm hoping.
Yeah. 100% support for Dr. Drew.
Don't ever support him.
Tani, I appreciate it. You notice my partner, Mike, is not wearing sunglasses. He's not supporting.
I have them on my chest, and I'm still not going to put them on.
Why not? Please.
You know what, Mike? You're really handsome, by the way.
Thank you. Yeah, I get that a lot.
That out there.
I get that a lot.
I appreciate that. I'm kidding. I didn't know how to say
that. I get that a lot.
Well, it's funny you say that.
Mike has never asked a girl out, Tani, ever. I'm not
well,
kidding.
That's true.
Want to give it a shot?
I don't know what my wife would have to say about that.
No.
I have to be very honest that you, Dr. Drew and I were talking about you before the podcast, and I said, you know, it's funny that you brought up Tani Katane. Because I was watching Bachelor Party the other day, and I had to leave the room with my family to go pleasure myself because of how hot you were. That is a true, 100% true story.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Don't say that in front of Dr. Drew. I feel he's like family. I can't.
Listen, I do radio every day with Mike. Yeah. I understand his tendencies, and this is nothing new.
Hey, and also, to be fair, I beat off every once in a while to Dr. Drew. So, I mean, I'm sitting there doing radio. I'm sitting there looking across the console on my radio partner. I'm like, what a beautiful man.
Welcome, Tani.
I might have to just go. And
But the really interesting thing here, what I was saying was Mike has, because of his attractiveness, has never had to ask women. Literally has never asked women off. Even your wife.
That is true. My wife had to do all the work for me. Yeah,
really?
That's true, yeah.
It's not that he wasn't going out. He was going out plenty, but never actually asked somebody out.
Never asked anybody. Never had to, doesn't have a, like, a line ready.
Yeah, like, no, I definitely don't have a line ready. But I did try to ask a girl out once when I was like 19.
Uh-oh.
I think I told you
no.
the story.
What happened?
But and I don't even know if this counts, so I may be in the clear. I was working out at a gym in Pasadena, Gold's Gym in Pasadena.
Okay.
And this girl behind the counter was so hot, and she was like really my type. She was like a half Asian, Drew, like kind of like ethnically vague.
That's Mike's brunette. Thing. He grew up in San Marino.
Yeah. Which means nothing to anyone listening.
A lot of
this is very heavily populated with Asian people. Yeah. So I would talk to her, and we got along well, her and I. And I would talk to her pretty much every time I came in, and she always had these fun things to say. And this is at the height of the Kobe Shaq Lakers. This is probably 99, I would say. And I go up to her and I go, "Hey, you know, I got season tickets. Would you like to go with me this Saturday night?" And she doesn't, like, there's no sarcasm to it. She looks at me and she goes, "No."
Not really.
You didn't make up a lot. Like, I have a boyfriend. There's no, she just said no.
I got that as a asking a girl out, and you got turned down, Mike.
Yeah, I did. So I'm 0%.
The one and only time. The one. That's why he stopped forever and signed off it completely.
Yeah.
Just went, "I'm done. I'm out of here."
Yeah.
And went back to having the women chase him.
They don't chase me.
Mike, what do they do then?
They hang around with me long enough for me to put my penis in them. That's really how it ends up.
Oh, my God. Drew, are you
I told you. Tawny, I told you how he is. Susan, straighten this out.
Okay. Family. This is like, I can't. It's like.
Tawny, Susan, help me out here. Susan, wait. My wife's here, too, so help me out.
Susan, I love you.
Oh, I love you, too.
So what are you up to these days, Tawny?
Well, it's Sunday.
Yeah.
Let's just start there. And on Sunday, it's my favorite day because I just, nothing, absolutely nothing.
That sounds so good.
You were on an episode of Botched?
I was.
Is that aired yet?
What?
Has that aired yet?
No, it hasn't.
Are we allowed to talk about it?
You know what? I don't, well, I guess now that we brought it up.
Yeah, you are.
Okay, we are, because Terry Dubrow is a friend of ours, and right. Heather, we had dinner with them last week, and he had mentioned you were struggling with a seroma or something. I didn't really ask questions.
Let me tell you.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the lymphatic system. So, listen, I've never met a doctor before. I was on the show for, I wanted my natural breast back. I didn't want my implants in anymore for numerous reasons. But I went to the doctor who first did it, and where there was a problem, and the doctor said, "It's not me. I didn't do anything."
Oh boy.
So after this particular surgery with Terry, Dr. Dubrow, I went into his office, and he was the first doctor I ever met that went, "You know what? That might have something to do with the surgery." Mm. And took total responsibility.
Oh, sure. No, he's the real deal. He's the real deal.
Dr. Drew would not, and this is all joking aside, Dr. Drew would not bump elbows with a doctor, even a plastic surgeon, unless he or she was reputable and respectable.
No, he's the real deal. He's an artist.
You will hang out with human beings that are shady as hell, but you will not. You do not take kindly to
right.
doctors who do not
That's
take
true.
Their job seriously.
That's true. Yeah. I'm sort of tough on my peers.
Yeah. Well, he's like you, Drew. You get what you see.
Yeah.
You know, he's one of the nicest guys that you'll ever meet.
That's right.
He's real. He's everyone thinks, "Oh, because he has this and this and that." No, you wouldn't know he had two nickels to rub together. He's just, this is the salt of the earth.
What made you, and I, if you don't want to get into
his
details.
His brother was the lead singer of
Quiet Riot.
Quiet Riot, yeah.
Kevin?
Yeah.
Really?
You didn't know that?
I didn't know that.
The guy killed and died? Yeah.
He passed away.
Yeah.
Kevin Dubrow, one of...
Terry Dubrow? Kevin Dubrow.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I know Bert Dubrow. Doesn't mean they're related.
You know what's weird about that? Can I just say that Rudy Sarzo played in Quiet Riot, and he was the bass player for Whitesnake.
Oh, that's interesting.
He was also, I believe, Ozzy's... touring guitar player or touring bass player for a long time too. Rudy Sarzo, another guy I see all the time. He's a really nice guy. He's like over the top, super committed animal rights activist.
Oh, and like we were just talking about before, belongs in the club with Drew and Terry. Just the salt of the earth.
Yeah, super nice dude.
Great guy.
Can I ask a quick question? If you don't want to get into details, I totally understand. But you said you wanted to get rid of your implants for a bunch of reasons. Was that emotional, psychological, or was it mostly just like physical? Was it pain? What kind of really led you to make that decision?
I think what led me to that decision is that I finally grew up and started to like me and realized that I didn't need anything to attract friends, the opposite sex, whatever. Yeah. I just realized that I was being a fraud. And plus I thought, I really want to get this word out. I really want to get the word out to girls that if you are thinking about doing this, you have to really start to think about what's going down inside of you, because it's not like any other type of plastic surgery where you're trying to keep young the way that you look. You're actually transforming your body, and boobs are something sexual. So who are you doing it for? You're doing it to attract men. Now, what kind of men are you going to attract? You're going to attract the same type of man who is a little messed up here like you are for getting them in the first place.
Well, at least not in a relationship, but at least the you're going to attract the eyeballs of men. You know what I'm saying? Like it's going to become this thing. And I'm glad you pointed that out, because breast implants and ass implants are different than other plastic surgery in that you're not trying to preserve you as you like you. You're trying to totally alter you. Well, as you know,
you're trying to change specifically sexual signals too.
Yeah,
I mean specifically. Right. Yeah.
And let me bring it back to Terry for a moment. I said to him, I said, like Heather. Heather obviously didn't feel that she needed anything to get a man, and that is a reflection on you, because you went for a girl who was so secure with herself that she didn't need to enhance her breasts. So I look at you, Terry, and I go, wow, you must be a great guy, because she's got to be a great woman.
He's very kinder and says she's a perfect person. That's his,
really?
That's his statement. Yeah.
That's a perfect person. Well, that's how you talk about Susan, too.
She is, another perfect person.
It is how you talk about your wife.
Really?
It actually gets old.
Yeah.
Yeah. Honestly, Susan, I'm not just saying that because you're here. Drew is right at the top of guys that talks.
Nate is laughing.
He talks so universally highly about you. I mean, listen, we bro out and we have our gripes about our wives, like I think any guy would. But he talks so highly about you. It makes me wonder what's really going on.
Question it. Yeah. No, he really does. He really does. And you know what, Drew? I was thinking about it earlier. We've known each other for like 30 years now, haven't we?
Oh my God! From radio and stuff, right?
Yeah. From doing lip lines back in
that's right.
81, 82.
Oh my God, was
nice.
Like, oh
no,
God bless. That's crazy.
You know, you brought up Whitesnake, and I probably through the generations that would be the thing that people most identify you as is the girl in the Whitesnake video. I have a personal story about David Coverdale, the frontman of Whitesnake, and I don't know if I ever talked about this on the air. This is very funny. I was seeing a ear, nose, and throat doctor.
Yeah.
Maybe 10 years ago.
Sugarman?
I don't remember who it was, but he was a pretty famous guy, and almost all his clientele were rock singers.
Beverly Hills?
Yeah, it was.
It's probably Sugarman.
And
you know, his brother managed the Doors.
Yeah.
That's a pretty cool gig.
You didn't know that?
No. Yeah. So I it's like one of those doctor's offices where you have to press the button and then like it highlights and then they let you know you're in the waiting room.
Yeah.
So I do that and I highlight the button. And I'm waiting for the doctor to come out to see me. And I have an appointment. And David Coverdale comes in and walks in. He's sitting in the waiting room with me, right? And I'm one of probably three people in the entire world at my age at the time who recognizes him and is, like, geeking out. And he's with another dude. And the doctor's assistant comes out and goes, yes, Mr. Catherwood? And I go, yeah, that's me. And I go to stand up. And he's like, wait. I'm next.
Oh,
and
no.
I go, I wasn't like, you know, I was kind of intimidated. I was like, well, okay, whatever. I mean, I ain't got anywhere to go. And the assistant very nicely said, no, actually, his appointment is at 3:15. Mr. Catherwood is next. So David Coverdale goes down the hall, like walks right by this lady, walks down the hall. And I could hear him screaming about the doctor. He's like, I drove all the way from so-and-so, and I have to wait behind this poofta? I'm like, what? Why am I a poofta? I didn't even do anything to you.
That is Yiddish from me. That's so funny. I'm so sorry about that, but you know what? That's David.
Yeah.
How'd it resolve?
That's it. And then he walked us, stormed out all pissy because he didn't get to go in front of me. And then I saw him at the Rainbow like 5 years later, and I told him, and he's like, yeah, it probably totally happened. And he was very apologetic. He was very nice to me. He's like, yeah, I probably did that.
That's him, too. year? Do you remember when this was?
Probably 2005 or six.
Oh, okay. Because when I was with him, he had to have vocal surgery.
Ooh,
nice.
So we were there a lot, and I was wondering if it was during that time.
No, no, no. Unless it was around that. This was a. I had people telling me that I was going out, and I was in a band at the time, and I was screaming my head off. I was in like a grindcore band, punk band, screaming my head off at night, and then trying to go do radio in the morning. And I would say my throat, it hurts, not like scratching, it's like it actually physically like muscle soreness. Mm. I'm like, you got to go see this guy. So I go to see him, and they're like, yeah, we could take care of that, no problem. That'll be $7,000.
Oh.
And I go, I have no health insurance. And they go, oh, well, that go ahead and write us a check. I was like, well, I'm just going to get you. Yeah, I'll deal with this on my own. Yeah.
So, Tani, with the lymphatic stuff, is that requiring like lymphatic drainage now or
massage? You know, I have 10 days in a row that I have to go to Hogue, and I don't know what they're going to do to me. But I think it's more of a, like a manipulation of the legs, and, very, very sexy. I've got these real sexy compression socks.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, yeah. then they massage the lymphatic back too, back up towards the core. Yeah. They can do that. And it often gets better. It often, I mean, you know, is it lymphedema? Is that what you have?
Yeah. And it doesn't. She said to me that she thinks because of the MRIs, look at all these bruises that I have.
Oh my gosh.
And yeah, because I'm not an easy stick. So they had to do an MRI contrast and with the dye.
Yeah.
And then one without. And yep. They had to stick me. I mean, look at that. I mean,
oh man. You are all bruised up.
Oh, I look like a heroin addict.
Like Rihanna after Chris Brown date.
Now, is that just for gadolinium enhancement, or did they actually light your lymphatic up?
I don't know. Okay. I don't know. That day, I spent like 3-4 hours at the hospital, and just the other day on Monday, I had a call. I called my doctor because my legs felt like. They were burning. And yeah. And since the doctors are all worried about blood clots going to my heart, mm-hmm. Monday I called her and I said, my legs, I can't take the pain anymore. I can't. And I haven't taken anything for the pain. And I said, I can't take the pain anymore. She goes, call 911.
Oh, my.
And I went, oh God, no, I don't want to call. It's like when your alarm goes off, you go, I don't really want to bother the cops, but maybe, you know, that type
yeah,
of thing.
Yeah.
Because I want you immediately, because if you go to the emergency room, you'll be sitting there for 6-7 hours. Because I want them to see you immediately. So the guys come, they pick me up, and they get me to the hospital. And one of the policemen turns around and says exactly what he said, Mike, that you said. He goes, I just want you to know, last night, me and my girlfriend were watching Bachelor Party.
Yeah.
No.
I went, oh, God, now thanks. As I'm laying on the gurney.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Well, but lymphedema doesn't necessarily get resolved, like, well, like, completely, but it can get a lot better. It can get a lot better.
It's a good band name.
Lymphedema?
Yeah.
Nice.
It's terrible, but she said that it's something I'm going to have to keep an eye on for the rest of my life.
Right, but it's manageable. It's not. It doesn't have to get out of control. It doesn't have to make you miserable. It can, but it doesn't have to.
Right. Just real quick, it's like the veins, they get clogged, but the lymphatic system breaks.
Yeah.
And yep. So then everything that goes through that is what makes the legs and the ankles and everything build up.
Right, so lymphedema is a little different than usual edema that's related to the veins. Lymphedema is related to the lymph system back here, and again, it's a little more challenging. It's a little more challenging, a little more chronic, and you know. But again, it's usually manageable. You'll like the lymphatic massage, I think.
Yeah, that would be looking forward to.
So other than botched, anything else we should look out for you?
I started. There's a show that we're in. Actually in post right now called Moms Anonymous, ironically, because you know how I feel about Alcoholics Anonymous. But it's called Moms Anonymous, and I am the executive producer and the reluctant star.
Huh.
Nice.
I'm starting on the other side of things, you know, because aging in this business is not fun.
No, without question. And in fact, I was going to say you've been very open about your dealings with addiction and your problems with in many arenas. And I wondered, you know, I don't know if anybody ever talks about it directly with you, but when you are, and you still are, without question, I'm not saying that to blow smoke. You are one of the more beautiful people on the planet. But when you make a living doing that, and you're 23, 24, 25 years old, does it present its own kind of psychiatric issues, knowing that there's like such a premium put on your looks? It has to be such a really weird, almost unique type of psychosis where your presentation is your livelihood.
Well, you're 100% right. But unfortunately, you don't realize that and come to that conclusion until you get older. Mm-hmm. But late. And then you look back, which leads to why I finally fell in love with me and started liking me and went, you know what? I don't need these anymore. I'm good. I'm good. I can do this.
And what, like testicular cancer, do you get to keep those implants? Because I know my friend, he kept his balls. What are you going to do with those now?
You know, I don't. I think, no, they're in the Smithsonian now.
with the car.
They should bronze them. That'd be awesome.
As the headlights.
So, that was a good one.
But have you had, like, I know my friend Christina Ferrari had some very explicit run-ins around this issue that were like egregious. Like, I couldn't believe what she was dealing with. And by the way, I still think she's one of the best broadcasters out there.
She's awesome.
Yeah, that they take, you know, somebody like that who not only has the right appearance for television but also has the skill set, and still you get and women disproportionately to men, would you say?
Hey, I will, I'm not speaking out of school here and I'm not trying to name drop. I think it's important to mention this. I had Goldie effing Hawn tell me to my face. You know, my wife knows her through working with Oliver Hudson for many years, and the Hudsons were nice enough to invite me to go out and hang out with Kurt and Goldie. And Goldie said, she's like, I was as big an A-list star as there could be, and there was just a time where casting directors, executives, they said, you aged out.
They would,
you know,
tell her
you're
that.
Done. Like,
so I think it's illegal to say that. You
well, not in 1985, it, probably.
I guess,
you know?
But so, Tanya, go ahead, your perspective on this.
Well, my perspective, I lived through it. I'm living through it. It's not fun. It doesn't feel good. It's you've really got to dig deep in yourself, because if it's been all about your looks all this time, and then now you have to wind that back. It's kind of like arrested development in a way.
Yeah.
I mean, you didn't really get a chance to grow because you were spotlight on your looks 24/7.
I just thought of an interesting question.
Yeah.
Is there something about, and I'm going to ask you two this, and maybe Susan too, something about the club of really attractive people that you know things the rest of us don't know?
Oh, shut up. Like, you're not in that club.
I'm not in that club.
I dealt with it for so many years of girls coming into Loveline. They're like, oh my God, Dr. Drew is so hot. I can't believe it's.
Well, I'm not in the club.
Look at his arms.
Tony, go ahead.
Okay. The story. We were doing Celebrity Rehab, right?
Yeah.
Okay, Celebrity Rehab, which, by the way, I wasn't coming off of anything on that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And we always had to do these fun exercises. And one day we were going to a big lake, and we were going to, you know, ride boats or something. Dr. Drew comes walking out of the car, and he's got this black T-shirt on.
Oh, yes.
And it's cut to here, and you can see his guns.
Tell me
and
more.
The girls were just dying. They're like, oh my God, he's so handsome. Uh-huh. And they have crushed Susan the entire. I mean, I feel like he's my brother. You know, I feel like we're family. So I just went, looked at my brother, and I was like, oh, I didn't know my brother was that handsome.
Oh, yes.
But the rest of the girls were like, oh my God, is he married?
Not just the girls, Tawny. Not just the girls. Ooh.
You guys,
girls are a couple guys there.
Which one
too?
Was the one that was with Tiger Woods?
Elin Nordgren?
No, the one that's that.
Rachel.
Rachel.
Apparently,
Rachel Yucato.
I was told that she was pretty hardcore after Drew.
You
guys are avoiding my question.
Rachel Yucato was. I think she just was. There's so few people in her life that she trusted, and she trusted Dr. Drew, and it like made her feel very.
Yeah, there were never any boundaries. Yeah. I never had any problem with boundaries with Rachel.
Drew, who was the girl that was in my room that I shared? That she had a really, really hard time. She was so beautiful.
Yes,
Amber.
Amber Smith.
Oh, tell me more. Tell me more about you and Amber.
Amber is a miracle. She is 2 or 3 years now sober, way deep into it, can talk.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my God. She is a miracle like you can't believe. So
she's a sweet lady.
Yes, send her a note. She's a different person.
Oh, my God. I have goosebumps. I am so happy. I mean, her story with her mother.
I know.
Mind you were to put her mother in the real
hospital.
Rehab.
No, we put her in the hospital because she has her blood pressure out of control and stuff. It was a mess.
Oh, my gosh.
We had her on this podcast.
We did?
Mm-hmm. Did that Amber Smith.
Oh, yeah, we did. We had Amber with me and Bob. Bob and I do this podcast, too, and we interviewed Amber. Bob. Yeah. And do you know what number that was, or where they can find it?
Susan? I can find out. It's one of the beginning ones. Yeah. So.
I have a question for you, Tawny. And
you guys did not answer my question. I know there's a club.
Because I don't think there's a club. Right. Especially, honestly, especially for women in Hollywood. I don't think that there's some unique kind of behavior because you are awash in a sea of impossibly beautiful people.
Okay.
I think that that kind of skews things in a different direction. But with recovery... And I would never think to name names, but I know for a fact from my own recovery and my involvement in the community here in Los Angeles that people, musicians and actors during that era, the glam rock musicians, guys in like hair bands and actors who hit it big, you know, 85 to like 91, right, have a particularly hard time trying to deal with the uncomfortable realities of recovery because your life was so crazy out of control, almost fantasy like. In comparison to guys, you know, from the grunge era, guys who from the 70s, the guys I knew and hang out with in meetings that have really hard time trying to bring brought down back to earth were, you know, selling, you know, 10 million records and having orgies pretty much every night in 1988, and it was almost impossible for them to be brought back to life. And I'm sure like people who didn't experience that and live through that life have no ability to understand just how crazy it got. But do you agree, Tawny, that something about that era and that lifestyle makes it really difficult to try to, you know, humble yourself and also have the ability to be drawn back into the toughness that comes with recovery?
Yeah, I do. I do agree with that. I was very fortunate during that time that I was working and I had to be responsible and I had to, you know, be on the set 4 o'clock in the morning, 5 o'clock in the morning. I never drank before. I didn't do drugs. And when I met David, he had already done his cocaine and wasn't doing it anymore and had already lost a fortune. And so the whole 80s era for me, I got to see because I wasn't doing anything. Mm-hmm. So I, you know, people come out with books like Nikki Sixx or David Lee Roth. I'm like, how did you remember this? You were high the entire time. This is not correct. So I got a unique perspective of just standing on the sidelines and watching all these people. Now, to your question, I think the problem with the 80s was that it wasn't just a club. It was the entire nation. Even if you weren't in a rock band, you still dressed like that. Right. Everybody took that persona on. When the 90s came, all of a sudden, Nirvana was a different perspective. Then punk was a different perspective. So it kind of divided and became more eclectic. So the 80s was this really unique bubble. And I think once it died and went away, I think it was not only having trouble with drugs and alcohol, it was trouble dealing with the fact that it was no longer the way of the world.
Right. The party ended.
The excess of the 80s, kind of just went away.
Ended.
Yeah.
And I'll run into, and I won't name names either, but I'll run into guys that, you know, either played in White Snake or played in choir or whatever, and their hair is, they're 70, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm like, dude, let it go gray. It's so sexy. Cut your hair short. And, you know, it's not nice. It's sad.
So the, to your point, though, to the topic we've been discussing, it, men have their own version of this.
How dare you, Dr. Drew? My hair.
Gene.
This is me, Gene Simmons from
KISS. Gene Simmons, Tony, here we are. Gene's here.
It's always a pleasure to talk to you, Tony Katane, and you, Dr. Drew. You're a handsome and powerful man.
Thank you, Gene.
But I am a bit insulted because, of course, my hair is naturally cobalt black. This is my natural.
Naturally black.
You know, I've had no.
All your band members naturally black, too?
Paul Stanley was, you know, he still looks like he's 24.
Oh, 24, yes. But yeah. Gene, just for the we got to take a little break here, Gene. How about you just say a prayer to just on behalf of everybody here?
Of course, of course. Here we go. I want to say
we're going to take a little break,
not
but
only
first,
for,
go ahead.
Miss Katane, not only for you, Dr. Drew, but for the world.
Okay.
Shloch lechaynu shmela yedni shmela chano yechayni machshana machene shulachane mai yigulachane yeshuvicha.
Right back.
Hi, Dwight. Of course, you've heard me rave about these guys. It's a product that I actually wanted to develop myself. I conceived of this. I knew it was needed. It was already in Australia, and now it is here. It works. The feedback is unanimous. Even though it's great to use, though, when you're sick or dehydrated, you can use it every day, especially now that the weather is changing. It's hot. So whether you're exercising or maybe you've got seasonal allergies or you drank too much or you got vomiting or diarrhea, whatever it might be, you can reduce fatigue and keep feeling healthy as well. Once you've started feeling dehydrated, sometimes a little too late. So you want to stay hydrated. And rapid rehydration, if you do get dehydrated, requires a proper balance of sodium, glucose, and water. And nothing provides it like Hydralyte. I'm telling you, it's the same as an IV fluid via your mouth, via your enteral system. It's based on established, proven science, quite simply the best rehydration product out there. It comes in great flavors. They have those fizzy tablets. Also, they have a powder and a pre-mixed drink. Compared to other sports drinks, Hydralyte delivers up to 4 times electrolytes with 75% less sugar. Hydralyte solutions are appropriate for all ages, and each bottle or package includes easy-to-follow directions. All right, you can find Hydralyte at Rite Aid or online at Amazon or click through at drdrew.com. And for a limited time, our listeners save 30% on Hydralyte if you use the code DRDREW, Dr. Drew, HY at checkout. That is DRDREWHY. 30% off. Great deal. Do it. Well, one of the great parts about working in recovery is seeing former patients successfully move on. And I've had patients that have come up to me years later and shake my hand and say, you know, sometimes people are kicked out of treatment. And many of these folks move on to become mental health professionals themselves. And, of course, the field of psychology is vast. The need for competent practitioners is huge. If you're considering this rewarding career, I urge you to consider the California School of Professional Psychology at Alliant University. Now, I've known them for a long time at Alliant University. I've spoken at their past events. It was founded in 1969. It's boasts an alumni network of nearly 50,000 people worldwide. And Alliant has fostered many of today's mental health pioneers, authors, and advocates. CSPP at Alliant University hosts both on-ground and online programs in business psychology, marriage and family therapy, clinical counseling. They also offer APA-accredited doctoral programs in clinical psychology that can allow for specialization in child psychology, clinical forensic psychology, and integrated psychology. And the faculty is crazy. It's made up of leaders and historical figures like Abraham Maslow, Carl Rogers, Viktor Frankl, some of the true fathers of modern psychology. For more information, and I worked alongside of these students as well, by the way, in the clinical setting, as well as having lectured at the institution. So for more on the California School of Professional Psychology, CSPP, at Alliant, click the Alliant banner on our website or visit Alliant, Alliant.edu, Alliant.edu.
Back. Mike is still in the bathroom, unfortunately, but we are back. Tani, you there? Tani Katane? Uh-oh. Tani, there you are.
I'm here.
All right. Mike went to the bathroom, so he'll be back in mere moments. We're going to take some questions from Facebook and back to my explanation for my sunglasses. I had eye surgery, and I'm wearing sunglasses because I have to keep my eyes closed most of the time, and it would be too weird to be looking at a Facebook feed with my eyes closed. Then you'd think even stranger things than me just wearing sunglasses. So, Susan, any Facebook questions?
So there's no picture of. Oh, there he is. I got him. Oh, you guys look so good.
Does Tani have her glasses on too?
Yes.
Good. Excellent.
It's
I appreciate it.
Adorable.
That. I dig that.
So let's talk smack about Mike while he's gone.
who would like to do so? Why don't I just leave too, and you guys can just have at it. Let's have some girl talk.
I don't want to be on camera.
Susan and I do. We do.
It's not girl talk I want Tawny and Susan having.
Yeah, I know.
We have girl talk, don't we, Susan?
Yes, we do.
Yeah.
I can only
We've
imagine.
Hit it off very well.
We do.
Very well. You very well hit it off.
We're both Newport girls.
What's coming off on Facebook? Let's get to our listeners and viewers.
All right. So let's see here.
Then we got to go to calls.
Word.
Okay.
Word, yes.
Thank you for that prayer, by the way, for Jane.
Oh, yeah. I'll thank you.
All right. Are there any calls up there?
Yeah, we have calls. Yeah.
Yes. Let's see.
Okay. So do you want to stay for the calls and listen in, Tawny?
Tawny, up for some calls?
I'm up for some calls, absolutely.
And, you know, you can chat with your Facebook friends.
If you have to go, let me know, but we're going to get to it.
I want to share this on my Facebook, but I don't know how to do this.
Just tap on it, cut and paste, and put it on your Facebook.
That is a beautiful thing.
Got it.
Okay.
Okay, Mike.
The technology is amazing.
Let's see here. There is a bit of a lag time, but I'm trying to talk to Daryl, so give it a second. It's not my fault. It is this computer's fault.
Yeah, it takes a while.
Hello, Daryl.
Yes.
What's up, man?
Good job.
Hey, buddy. What's happening?
Hi, Daryl.
We hear you.
Hello. Right.
Yes, Daryl.
Gentlemen.
Yes.
Daryl, proceed.
Hello, Miss Tawny.
Hi, Daryl. Yes.
Yeah, it's Daryl, your Twitter and Facebook friend.
Daryl Robertson?
Yes, it is.
Wow. Nice to talk to you.
Daryl.
You too.
Anyone? Another age reference.
Back to my people, my peeps.
Okay. Yes. My question for you, Miss Tawny, I bet you've never heard this one before. And that is, have you ever had a love addiction, you know, you take a crush and it turns into something you can't live without 24/7? And if so, what did you do to control it or get rid of it?
Daryl, do you suffer from something like that?
Heck no.
Okay.
I'm 60 and I haven't fallen in, I've stepped in love, but I've never fallen in love.
Okay. Mm. Well, let me just, before Tawny, you answer that, let me just say that people debate whether there is such a thing as love addiction. It's sort of in the same category as codependency.
Yeah. They really debate that, huh?
Well, some people go, they debate whether you could, if you're really in an actual love relationship, can you be addicted to it? They think it's a distorted experience. You can't really call it love.
Gotcha.
I think love addiction is a construct that helps people understand some of their behaviors. But if you find that, you know, you're shattered when a relationship ends, you're stalking people, or you're sort of unable to have a real connection, adolescents do this normally. There's a certain amount of love addiction adolescents normally. They can get going with that very easily. In adulthood, it's not so normal. But go ahead, Tawny. You answer the question.
Well, so do you think that it's a because it sounds pretty much codependent.
Yeah, it's in that zone. It's in that zone for sure, where people don't have good boundaries and they need other people to feel like they're whole. And it's in that same zone.
I've actually had to deal with that from someone who was dating my ex-husband.
Uh-huh.
Who was stalking me and to the point where my ex had to put a severe alarm system in my house
because
I thought I was going to come home and there'd be a boiling rabbit in my kitchen.
Right.
Seriously, I mean, this person was very scary. She'd been stalking me on Twitter for a year and a half and I didn't know it. She was sending me, when I did find out, I saw pictures of her in bed tweeting pictures to me. And so I've dealt with it being the subject of it, but I've never... The only time that I can ever think of like being in love where I couldn't live without someone was like you just said, when I was a teenager.
Right.
And that person was Robin Crosby, who happened to be the guitar player for Rat. And
God rest his soul. He passed away of AIDS, right? I believe he died of HIV. Yeah.
He did. Extremely sad. But yeah, we were like that. We were 16, 17, you know, years old. And I think it's like you said, it's very, for for teenagers, but we didn't stalk each other, and it didn't get out of control.
Amber Smith came in with a lot of that. She went into the sex addiction program with primarily love addiction.
Oh, man.
And women often come to sex addiction through love addiction.
That's right. She did.
Yeah. She was stalking a guy at 12-step meetings.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. God, I'm so happy to hear that she's getting better.
Oh, she is a miracle. I mean, she's amazing. So, yeah. So, okay. What else you got there, Mike?
All right. Thanks for the call, Daryl.
Daryl.
My other brother, Daryl. Let's see here. This is a good question for Miss Katane. I don't know how to pull these up other than hit talk, and it doesn't seem to want to let me do that. Here we go. Come on now. Darren.
Yes.
What up, man?
How's it going?
It's going very well, sir.
Good.
What's
happening there?
Hey, how's it going? Is this Drew and Mike?
Yes, it is. And Tony Katane.
Yes, sir.
You live, both of y'all, and Tony and Susan Penske.
Oh, thank
you, Darren. You live too.
Susan getting the shout out. Nice.
Oh, boy.
What can we do for you?
You can't leave her out.
Thank you.
Well, I've been listening to you guys for several years, and I can just, first off, I'll say, Mike, I think you're underrated when it comes to the recovery community. You've done a really good service to people over Loveline. Drew,
I agree.
I mean, we don't even got to mention you. You're like the reverend of recovery, you know? And I appreciate everything you guys have done. I've been listening to you guys.
A huge
like
compliment, man. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, Darren.
Lo and behold, my brother, you know, ends up with an addiction. He likes cocaine, and I don't know if he's smoking it or just snorting, but we're in Aranon, me and my family, and I just want to make sure I'm doing everything I can to either give him help and to keep my family on track, because they're having a really rough time of it, and just didn't know if there was anything you guys would suggest, maybe just, I just want to make sure I'm doing all I can. You know what I mean?
Where is he at? Has he been treated? Is he open to treatment? Is he contemplating treatment? Is he totally rejecting that he even has a problem? Where is his head?
Okay, his head is right now. He's sort of like, yeah, I think I might do it, but, you know, it's weeks turn into 3 weeks. And I had a really serious talk to him, and I said, look, let's do something about this, bud. I mean, I'll do whatever I can to help you out. And he just keeps saying that he'll do it, but then again, he really won't. You know what I mean?
Stimulants are hard, Mike, because they're so intermittent. You know, yeah. It's hard to get a clear bottom until something happens, and that's unfortunate when it does, or they end up in the street or whatever. But it's hard to motivate a stimulant addict because they have the illusion of control because it comes in binges.
That's so true.
Well,
yeah.
Unless he's smoking rock. There's no illusion there.
Meth.
Oh, yeah. Or no. Crack, even.
Well, crack, they usually get their, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. But let me just understand. So where would you send him if he were motivated?
We've looked in a couple of recovery centers around here that are like Christian faith-based, and they're 6 months to a year, both right. of them.
Fantastic.
That we've looked into, which I know from listening to you guys,
Fantastic.
6 months to a year is ideal. That's sort of where we're leaning. If we can get him to actually do it, and you know, I've actually thought about trying to do some type of intervention, but
yeah, that was my next.
I don't know. I mean,
that was my next suggestion, but you have to hire. You know, you don't do that on your own. You have to actually hire somebody to do it, and it's a way of precipitating a crisis. You have to be. You all have to be ready as well to leave him. You know, no longer be in his life if he doesn't go to treatment. I mean, that's the leverage you have, which is
that's the whole purpose of that.
Yeah.
And request to you would be, well, I guess it's not a request. It's because I can't pretend to know what's right or wrong to do here. I don't know you, and I don't know your brother. And I know all I do know is that you're probably really, really hurting and very concerned. And so often when you're dealt with this situation where you have a loved one, someone that you really care about that is dealing with addiction and is resistant to getting help, the common kind of go-to is to then pamper that or support the addiction, thinking that you're doing the right thing.
Right.
Give him some money because he's down and out. Give him a place to stay when he needs one. And although I totally understand the desire to do that.
But they're in Aranon. I assume they're doing the right stuff.
Yeah, but if you're in Aranon, great first step. If you're in Aranon and then letting him sleep on your couch and
right.
rent-free,
right.
really who's winning here? And my point is that you got to be, if you truly love your brother and you want what's best for him, you and your parents and everyone else really has to be ready to pull the trigger on cutting him out of your life until he gets sober.
Right.
So and that's so hard to do, man.
Support the recovery.
You love somebody so much, and then you the idea of like going, they're not, I'm going to cut him out of my life is very difficult, extremely difficult.
You know, Mike and I are watching this show Flaked.
Yeah.
That Will Arnett. Now about halfway through the second season, it really gets into the nuances of recovery.
Well, and Will Arnett has been so open about his recovery, and you could tell he worked very hard to really, in a tasteful way, give the reality of being in the program. Yeah. But what were you going to say?
What's the name of the show?
Flaked.
Flaked?
On Netflix.
Netflix, yeah.
On Netflix.
And it's very good, although I've lost hope for the Will Arnett character.
He's not squared away.
That's not just addiction.
But he is
anymore, that's not just addiction.
He is surrounded by a lot of hot poon, in his defense.
That's just my point. Sometimes it's not just addiction.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's that's one of the really serious problems we have these days. People don't get properly diagnosed and assessed and this kind of stuff.
No, because sometimes it's just a manifestation of the problems and not an addiction.
Right. Sometimes it's substances related to other conditions. Sometimes it's trauma. Sometimes it's addiction and something else. It can be lots of different combinations.
But for Daryl, do you guys
sometimes
agree
that— Sometimes it's just dependency that a doctor created by giving you the wrong medicines over too long a period of time.
I'm sorry, for Darren, don't you guys agree that that has to be—
Yes.
The unfortunate is you got to go nuclear on it sometimes, and you just got to draw that line in the sand and say, I'm sorry, I love you, but because I love you, I cannot talk to you or have anything to do with you until you are not using.
Also,
okay. Can I ask you one more question?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. My parents are taking it really hard. My mother in particular, she's really just not gotten to the point where she just stays at home waiting for that phone call. And I've other than Naranon, I've tried to get her to tag up with somebody in a sponsorship situation.
Right. Yes.
And the Naranon group we go to is sort of, there's not anybody in that group that has been down the road to the point they can sponsor. So I know that you would probably suggest going to another Naranon meeting.
Or a therapist. Or an Al-Anon, just an Al-Anon meeting.
Exactly. And that's why I was going to ask you, do you think it's appropriate for me to suggest to her to go to a therapist?
Oh, sure. 100%. Especially some of the older folk have trouble staying with Al-Anon and Naranon, things like that. Therapists sometimes will really be very, very helpful. And the what she's manifesting is what every mom of a severe addict manifests, which is the fantasy that if she doesn't rescue him, he will die. That is the fantasy. So that's why we call them loving them to death, because the reality is the opposite is true. If they continue on the path they're on, they will love that person to death. And they just won't cut them off without a lot of support from somebody like a therapist or an Al-Anon sponsor or something like that, because they and their every instinct, and of course the addict plays on this, every instinct and the addict again amplifying it is that guy's going to die if I don't do something.
Especially a mom.
Yep.
And I Tawny's so right. I could sit here and talk tough, Darren, about like, man, you draw that line in the sand. And it all made sense to me from just experiencing it as an addict. It all made sense to me from being friends with that. Then I had a kid.
Yeah.
I can't effing imagine trying to carve my daughter out of my life simply because that's what's best for her. It's just
you can't do it alone. That's for sure.
Yeah.
So, all right, Darren. Thanks, buddy. Appreciate it.
Good luck, man. And thank you again for the compliments. It really means a lot.
What else you got up there?
I don't really have any other calls.
Facebook up there, Susan.
Mm.
Well, I have somebody on Twitter who said she was on hold for an hour and then got hung up on. So we're working out the system. I feel kind of bad, but
I also apologize, but it did look like they reset the calls from after the
we lost our computer program. So Ashley, call us back.
Yes, please do, Ashley.
So this is a new technology for us all to enjoy. I'm sorry. Let's talk about Tawny. I'll look on Facebook.
I'm looking through on my Twitter. Go ahead, Susan. I'm sorry.
Well, I'm pulling it up. Hold on. So,
someone asked live, are you and Chuck in a good place?
That's a good question.
From, let me put the glasses on. What does she say? What's her name? Shanae Mandel. Shay.
Shay.
Shay underscore Shay. S-A-J. _SHJ. Are Chuck and I in a good place? Yeah, we are in a good place. The divorce was thank God it was like just on the back, the front end of TMZ.
No, because seriously.
It was a skeptical, and it was just all smoke and mirrors. Because when there's a lot of money involved, it's not a regular divorce. It's when you're in the public, it's not fun. Also,
and when they're kids, then the divorce lawyers can crank this thing out to you've spent ridiculous amounts of money.
Oh, we did, and seven figures a couple of times.
Oh!
Yeah. And I was responsible for half of it, and he was. So it was, listen, I know today that the way that we went through it, Chuck would never go through that again. I think he really regrets it. I know he feels really bad. And we are in a really good place because what supposedly happened didn't really happen. But they jumped on it and seized on it to make their case better. And he's paying for it. He's also grown a conscience, and he's a really great guy. And we're good friends. We're good friends. We were traveling and going on vacations and all that kind of stuff together. In the last year with our last daughter getting ready to go to college, we both have been kind of taking time to ourselves, and that's a hard one. Empty nest. Yeah. And Drew, you know how that feels. It's not fun.
We kind of liked it.
Well, you had three,
and they were gone all at once. It was like we went from.
Yeah, you liked it until you had to write checks.
Oh no!
I had to hear about it every night at Loveline.
I don't know.
It's terrible. So we're going to be in each other's lives for the rest of our lives. You know, we've got these two kids, and if you don't get along with that person. I mean, what, the weddings, the baby showers and all of that, your life is going to be a living hell.
Yeah.
Right. So I suggest, you know, rolling back whatever feelings of animosity you have towards your ex and get over it and realize what you fell in love with in the first place and go, you know what, that's a decent person. I like this person.
What's the breakdown of your kids? How many men, how many boys, how many girls?
Two girls, no boys.
How old are they? They must be like 20.
One's 18, right?
Rainy. Well, Winter. You met Winter.
Yeah, I met Winter.
She's now 24.
Wow, crazy.
I know. And our youngest is 19 and just graduated CDM, where Susan Drew went.
There it is. I'm sure she's the biggest alumni in the entire history of the school.
I couldn't wait to get the hell out of there.
How do you deal with, and I'm being very delicate with this question, because I'm being serious too. I can only assume that your daughters are ridiculously hot. You know, they have your blood, and Chuck's a super good looking dude. And I can only imagine they're like really just stunners. How do you have a talk with them and talk about like the trappings of having guys bend over backwards?
The club.
And you, like what can come from the I'm sure amazing things that come from it, but also people exploiting you, taking advantage of you.
This is the other side of the aging conversation we had too, right? There's another piece of this. So go ahead, Tony.
Yes. Well, okay. So what was the question?
Do you have a direct conversation with your daughters about being the type of girl that guys are constantly bending over backwards to do stuff for, and the motives of a lot of these guys, you know, they really only want one thing, and they're not going to stick around.
Yes. Motive. What's the word?
Motives.
Thank you. That I absolutely, unequivocally have always talked to both of my girls about.
Yeah.
The good looks, I haven't really had to go there because I tried to make them more scholastic.
Yeah.
I went down that road with them because that's not what happened to me. So what doesn't happen to you, you tend to do with your children.
Sure.
So I was really, it's all about school. It's not about looks. It's about school. It's ACTs twice, SATs twice, or, you know, college. So yes, they're good looking girls. One of them, my youngest one, is almost 5'11". She looks like a Victoria's Secret model. She's got these cheekbones and all this hair, and she's gorgeous. And I said to her, I said, how would you feel? Would you like to, you know, get on the runways in Paris or Italy? Between your father and I, we can probably get that done. She goes, no, I don't want anything to do with that stuff.
That's huge.
I'm like, yay. Yay.
It is true, right? So, I think we all do it to a certain extent. You try to impose on your children all the things that weren't afforded to you or that you didn't choose.
Something about your upbringing always affects your parenting style, whether it's too much, too little, something. It always rains through one way or the other.
That's right. So, to answer the question with the looks, I'm sure they know that they're good-looking girls, but you know what they are? They're good citizens. That's all I wanted to raise. However direction they went, whatever they decided to do in their life was up to them. I just wanted to make sure that my children were good citizens of the world.
Yeah.
Well, Tani, we are, as always, it's just great to talk to you, and I appreciate spending a little time with us, and it's great to catch up, and thank you for helping our callers. And
a real pleasure to meet you, honestly.
Yeah.
Even digitally.
Getting to know Mike, and helping Susan out here. Susan, anything?
Everybody's very concerned about your eyes, Drew.
They should be. My eyes are bugging me.
I'm sorry. Well, this is it, and you get to rest now.
I know. This is it.
Unless you want to come on calling out and mother.
Can you play a little blues guitar? Just something to help that make that.
I'm
going to
be in a dark room, complete. Just sitting quietly. That's my plan right now.
After I get some hot coals after this.
No, I want like 3 quarts of Hydrolite. I kid you not.
Oh, I'm going to go to the car and get you your Hydrolite.
Thank you.
And, I'm so sorry. You'll get better, though.
Yeah, it waxes and wanes, and I'm still glad I did. Thank you, Dr. Seal, for putting me through this. But it's extraordinary to me that the average person can get through this. I mean, I sort of know what's going on.
It probably makes it worse, actually.
I had cataract surgery.
Ignorance is bliss.
So easy.
Ignorance is bliss with surgery. If you know what they're doing, it probably makes things so much worse, and you know what's going on.
Yeah, but when you see it happening right there in front of your eyes, it was incredible. And then the discomfort afterwards, you kind of, what's that?
Did you get any anesthesia?
No. They numb the eyeball, and you take a little piece of Xanax.
Okay.
So metal.
I'm serious.
And then he won't take the medication.
Opiates make me feel terrible.
He gets really agitated.
I'm with you, dude. So, don't do it.
I can't do that Vicodin. I used to. We know that. The Vicodins, the Percocets, I think there's a limit in one person's life, and then you hit that limit, and then it turns into your worst enemy.
Good. Nice. Yeah. I like that.
I think it's actually good for a doctor to have surgery and see how it feels, because, you know, they're so matter of fact. And
no, it's true. That's true. We get a little cavalier, but that's why I was thinking to myself, I can't imagine how the average person doesn't call the doctor every 15 minutes. Like, oh, I'm miserable. But anyway,
because you take the doctor's word for it. As an average dude, you go, "I'm the doctor said it's going to be uncomfortable for a weekend." Okay.
Well, that's what I'm doing. You know. So, well, listen, everybody, we're going to wrap this thing up again. Thank you all. Check out DrDrew.com and the YouTube channel, and follow us on Facebook, and check out the people that support us. Click on the banner, get that 30% discount on Hydrolite,
and find Tani at Tani Katane on Twitter and Facebook, right?
Right, and Instagram.
And what do you have coming up? You want anybody to know about?
Well, we're in post-production with Moms Anonymous, and I'll let everybody know when that starts to air. And great. I'm just
and then you may see her on Botched, which should be a great episode because, you know.
Yeah.
And I know Terry loves you, so it should probably be a fun episode with you guys.
Good guy.
All right, guys, we'll wrap it up, and we'll thank you, Mike, and we'll see you all next
thanks.
Time.
Thanks.
You bet.
Remember, you can find all these podcasts at drdrew.com. The Dr. Drew podcast, the This Life podcast, and the Adam and Drew podcast, which is available 5 days a week. Find them all on iTunes and rate us 5 stars. Subscribe and get it first. And if you're really happy, click on the Amazon banner at drdrew.com to help support the show. We'll thank you for it. If you join the email list via drdrew.com/contact, we'll send you a weekly infusion newsletter with Dr. Drew's news. We're so grateful when you get in touch. We read all your emails and we'll bring you the subject matter you want to hear about.
You live.